Hello and welcome to the Badger Talks podcast, the podcast that shares interviews with experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison community about their work, research, and a little bit about what they're like as people, too. I'm your host, Buzz Kemper. Today, we're focusing on harmful algal blooms, and I'm happy to have as my guest, Jordan Murray, harmful algal bloom epidemiologist with the University of Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Jordan Murray, thanks so much for being on this program. This is an area in which I have about an amoeba's level understanding. So we're going to dive in here about algal blooms.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about algal blooms. Thanks for having me today.
Cool. The first thing I'd like to know, and this I'm always curious about this, when we get into something that at least appears to me to be a somewhat arcane and very deep, specific subject like this, What got you interested in it? Did Jordan, as a six-year-old girl, say, "Mom, I want to get into harmful algal blooms"?
Close.
Close. All right. Close. Good deal. Tell me about it.
I went to college, studied neuroscience, and throughout my undergraduate career, always interested in how the environment affects human and animal health, more specifically brain health, because neuroscience, but Overall, how does environmental contamination affect health? And one of the events that took place in my life that led to that interest was, it's known as the 2014 Toledo water crisis. Not sure if you're familiar with that, but
I am not.
It's recognized globally. So I'm from Toledo, Ohio.
Okay.
And grew up there, was raised there, and went to graduate school at the university. And back in 2014, we had an event called the Toledo Water Crisis. And essentially, we get our drinking water from Lake Erie. And Lake Erie is known to experience pretty severe algal blooms. And these algal blooms can be harmful because they can produce toxins that can be harmful to human and animal health. And we are having a really hot year with a lack of rain. 2014 summer, it was about August, and really large algal blooms taking place in the western basin of Lake Erie, which is where our drinking water supply comes from, our water treatment plant. Because something like this doesn't typically happen, it's very abnormal. The city didn't really know how to respond, and you know, you had to figure out how to communicate to the public about the significant health event. And of course, people were panicking because they hear toxins in the water. Like, what does this mean for my health? And
very scary
event. And so this was a case study that has since been studied from 2014, and it's still being studied now. Just the severity of the event is kind of crazy. So that happened to me. I was about a senior in high school at this time. And, you know, at this point in time, I didn't know a ton about harmful algal blooms and the significance of this public health event. And it wasn't until later during grad school where I learned more about, you know, the health impacts of harmful algal blooms and just how significant that event was. Because I was just a kid, you know. All I knew was that they had canceled school because we couldn't drink the water. And that's about the level of, you know, severity that I understood. Mm-hmm. But fast forward to college, a lot of my coursework involved studying how water contamination or other contaminants in the environment affect brain health and then just other biological systems. And then I get to grad school and I'm studying epidemiology. So I got my master's in public health with a concentration in epidemiology. And for those who aren't familiar with the field of epidemiology, it's essentially the study of disease transmission and disease prevention. So this can be things like infectious disease, like COVID, for example, infectious disease, or more towards my area of expertise, which is prevention and management, studying disease transmission of waterborne diseases, specifically as it relates to harmful algal bloom exposure.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have definitely a personal connection to harmful algal blooms because it affected me growing up, and it still affects, you know, my hometown. And
yeah, well, I love that, you know, when people find, you know, they
they live through a problem and then decide, okay, now I want to make my career be about helping be one of the solutions or helping find solutions to this problem. So that's a really great thing. Now I want to unpack a couple of the terms that we're talking about. One is the term algal blooms. So these, we're talking about algae, and algae is singular. And first of all, tell me the difference between the word algae and algal.
Sure. Yeah. Algae is singular. So a singular organism. And then when people think of algal, they think of a large abundance of algae, essentially. Okay. And a bloom is just that. It's an abundance of algae.
And where does this stuff come from? Should we think of it as a plant? Should we think of it as a type of moss? What is algae?
Yeah. So that's a good question. Algae. So there's a difference between algae, typical plants, you know, things you see in the water with the roots, and you know, they can be almost like lake seaweed. People tend to think of algae like that in the in the water. So there's a difference between that algae, which is not harmful or not usually harmful to human health, and then what people think of as blue-green algae. So that's the term that people consider to be, you know, dangerous. And people think of, oh, the lakes are closing because of the blue-green algae.
Right.
So there's a difference between blue-green algae and normal algae.
Okay. And what is that difference?
The difference is that blue-green algae aren't actual algae. They are.
Aha!
Contrary to popular belief.
That sneaky stuff? Okay.
I know.
Interesting.
But
all right.
Blue-green algae can look like normal lake algae. A lot of people can confuse the two.
Okay.
So blue-green algae aren't actual algae. They're actually a type of bacteria, and they're a type of photosynthetic bacteria, meaning just like normal plants, like lake algae, they get their energy from the sunlight, but they're still a type of bacteria. And so...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're called cyanobacteria is the official term, and cyan meaning blue.
Yeah.
Hence blue-green algae. But cyanobacteria in itself, they're not harmful. So these are organisms that date back hundreds of thousands of years. They've been on this planet since the planet begun, essentially.
Okay.
They're one of the first organisms that learned how to make oxygen. And because of that, they're responsible for the creation of Earth's atmosphere and water bodies as we know them today. And they're found.
So these algae do some good.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay,
you should be
good.
Thanking the cyanobacteria for being alive today.
We do not have to think of them as completely evil. I like that. Okay, great.
No. Yep. And they're, you know, ubiquitous. So they're found in lakes, rivers, and streams all over the world.
Okay.
But they become a problem when certain environmental factors contribute to their growth and reproduction. With enough sunlight and high temperatures, low wind, you know, stagnant water, nutrient input, specifically phosphorus and nitrogen in the water, all of those factors can make cyanobacteria reproduce and grow rapidly to what we know as cyanobacterial blooms, or cyanobacterial algal blooms is another word for it.
Okay.
Some species of cyanobacteria that grow into these blooms can produce toxins.
Okay. So, right. Now let's get into the bad stuff.
The evil stuff.
So is it cyanobacteria?
Cyanobacteria, yeah.
Okay. Or blue-green algae. Does all of it contain these toxins, or are there certain strains of it? And then I want to get into, what do these toxins actually do to people and animals?
Yeah. So not all species of cyanobacteria produce toxins.
Okay.
And not all of the species that do produce toxins produce them all of the time.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a consistent thing.
Okay.
And so you can't really know without testing the water whether the water body has toxins in it.
Right.
Just by visual observation, it's not usually sufficient. Although if you do see large accumulation of cyanobacteria and you see that, you know, pea soup looking water or scums on the surface, you can probably assume that there's some level of toxin being produced just by the amount of cyanobacteria present in the water. But yeah, you don't know unless you test the water.
Is it a toxin or a group of toxins? And what are they?
There are several different toxins that can be produced by cyanobacteria. We usually group them based on the organ that the toxin targets. So there's toxins that target the liver. Mm-hmm. There's toxins that target the brain. There's toxins that target the skin, dermal layer of your body. And in Wisconsin, we typically see a toxin called microcystin. And microcystin is a toxin that targets the liver. And so people who ingest microcystin might experience symptoms associated with the liver, like the gastrointestinal symptoms, the vomiting, the diarrhea, abdominal cramps, things like that. So to answer your question, microcystin is a prevalent toxin in Wisconsin's waters. We do see other ones. Sometimes we'll see neurotoxins, but very rare. Those don't usually affect human health. We usually see those affecting dogs. So when we see dog deaths attributed to toxins, usually we assume that there are neurotoxins at play, because the dogs will usually experience seizures and paralysis, muscle weakness, and so those are neurotoxic effects. So, neurotoxins must be at play.
What does the exposure have to be for either a human or a dog or any animal to experience the symptoms? Do you have to ingest it, or do you just have to be swimming in it and have it come into contact with you?
Mm-hmm. All the above.
All of the above. I was afraid you'd say that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
People can be exposed either through ingesting or swallowing water with toxins in it. Mm-hmm. They can be exposed through breathing in aerosolized toxins, so toxins that form in little air bubbles in the air. If you breathe them in, you can experience respiratory effects, coughing, sore throat, congestion, runny nose, itchy eyes, things like that. Or if you come into skin contact with water that contains toxins, you can experience rashes wherever that point of contact was on your skin. Fish consumption is another possible exposure route. There's not a lot of literature/research out there.
That's what I was going to ask. Is aquatic wildlife affected directly by it, or do they pass it on to people who consume the fish or other aquatic wildlife?
Yeah, so to answer the first part of your question, aquatic animals, fish, can be affected by cyanotoxins and cyanobacterial blooms in general. So
wow, and I feel bad for them because they can't get away from it.
No, they can't.
Yeah,
no,
they're stuck.
They can't. Yeah. And cyanobacteria, because they rely on sunlight to grow, they can essentially deplete the oxygen supply from the water. This leaves fish not having enough oxygen to breathe or maybe not being able to escape. We call these dead zones, where cyanobacteria takes up a lot of the oxygen and leaves basically none for any aquatic life to survive. So in that way, it can affect fish. And then in terms of toxins, we do know that toxins can accumulate in fish tissues. They're more likely to accumulate in the internal organs, like the liver or kidneys, rather than the fillet or the muscle tissue, which is the part that most people tend to eat.
Right.
Although some cultures do, we recognize that they do eat the entire fish.
Right.
And so we do recommend that people, if they can, remove the internal organs prior to consumption. But yes, toxins can accumulate in fish tissue.
Yeah.
Now, how does that affect human health if you were to consume a fish with toxins in it? To date, there have been no known reports of people getting sick from eating fish.
Interesting.
Potentially contaminated fish.
Okay.
That we know of.
Yeah.
Now, it could be that someone ate a contaminated fish and we just don't know about it, but it doesn't seem to be a significant issue. But we still don't know. There's a lot of avenues of this specific topic that we don't know a lot about. Specifically, toxin concentrations, how they build up in fish tissues, it can vary depending on the species of fish, the age of the fish, the migration pattern of the fish. It's dependent on so many factors, and so it's really hard to study if one species of fish, how that affects human health. We just don't know at this point. But we suspect that the risk is relatively low.
Okay.
Now there may be a higher risk if you consume the internal organs because they're more likely to accumulate those toxins.
Right. So if people don't actually seek medical attention, then the problem never really gets to be studied as well because
Correct. And then the other issue is these symptoms are very vague and they sound like a myriad of other symptoms, like allergies or just a sore throat or a cold, or you know, a rash can be a result of a ton of different things. So it's really hard to know. People have a really hard time understanding if this illness is, you know, related to toxins or if something else is at play. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it's makes the problem of, you know, preventing / managing these diseases pretty challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. But here at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, so what my program does is we do harmful algal bloom related illness surveillance and response. So we collect and investigate harmful algal bloom related illnesses in humans and animals. Mm-hmm. We use this data to learn more about these illnesses and then to educate people about these illnesses and how to stay safe from them, and just so they have general knowledge about them in general.
And what is that advice, by the way? What do you recommend that people do to either prevent it from happening or properly figure out what's happening if they are being affected?
We advise people to stay away from any water that is discolored or has the appearance of, you know, spilled latex paint or that green pea soup water that smells like sewage, fishy. Stay away from that sort of water.
If it smells like sewage, you might not want to swim anyway.
You might not want, probably not.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Keep your dogs out of that water, too. Yeah. If your dogs do swim in that water, try to rinse them off as soon as you can after they get out of that water. Mm-hmm. If you're playing with your dog in the water, we recommend using more flat objects for retrieval rather than spherical objects like balls. So they're good. They go to catch a tennis ball.
A frisbee is better than a tennis ball.
Yeah, just because they're more likely to ingest the water. If they're, you know, going to fetch a tennis ball, they have a higher chance of getting water in their mouth.
Interesting. Yeah. I never would have thought of that. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
We also recommend people pay attention to the beach signage. A lot of times local health will post beach closures or health warnings. And by the way, my department works very closely with local health to issue these advisories and help local health understand health risks. Mm-hmm. So pay attention to the beach signage. If you're not sure whether the water is safe or not, you know, stay out of it. We like to say, when in doubt, stay out. And the best place usually to get information about a local swimming spot is to call your local health department and ask them, because they would have a better understanding of what the water conditions are like at that specific swimming spot. A lot of people will come to the state health department or the Department of Natural Resources to get information, but more often than not, you know, we're in charge of all the water bodies throughout Wisconsin. It's a lot. So we recommend people check with local authorities.
So moving water is generally going to be healthier than stagnant water. So a spring-fed lake will generally be less affected than a lake that's just stagnant or a pond. Is that correct?
That's correct. All right. Yeah. And then to get at your question of helping people understand if they do have harmful algal bloom-related illness and what to do in case they do. My program, what we do is when we receive an illness complaint, someone who thinks that they're sick from harmful algal blooms, and by the way, you can report these illnesses to my program. If you type in blue-green algae, Wisconsin Health Department on Google, our webpage will usually the first one to pop up. And you can go to our webpage, and on the webpage, homepage, there's a link at the bottom. It's a survey, and you can click the survey, and it's you're able to report your illness. You fill out a bunch of questions about your symptoms and your exposure and contact information. And so that's one way of reporting the illness. Right. You can also call our department. Our phone number is on our website.
Okay.
And then we also receive referrals a lot of the times from local health departments, Department of Natural Resources, the Wisconsin Poison Center. We have a close relationship with them. They receive a lot of harmful algal bloom illness reports that they forward to us to deal with. And then sometimes veterinarians and physicians will send reports to us to investigate. So at the health department, we are the ones in charge of investigating these illnesses. And what we do when we receive these reports is we follow up with the person who reported, whether they reported on behalf of themselves or their kids mm-hmm. or their pets. Mm-hmm. We call them up. We deliver a very thorough interview to them with a ton of questions about, you know, their exposure and what did the water look like at the time of exposure and what are your symptoms? When did they start? Things like that. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to get at is understanding if their illness is actually related to a harmful algal bloom or toxin or or if another cause is more likely. Most of the time we deliver these interviews and we find out that the illness is not related to harmful algal blooms.
Right. I mean, if you're talking about symptoms that are similar to like allergic reactions, things like that, it could be ragweed. If it's a skin rash, it could be they came into contact with poison ivy.
Exactly.
Right. It could be gastrointestinal things. It could be something they ate. Yeah. So I imagine that is really difficult to, to get a handle on.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done or is being done in terms of either preventing or suppressing these algal blooms in the first place or cleaning them up once they happen? Or is it pretty much it happens and we're stuck and we've just got to deal with the aftermath?
Yeah. The prevention, remediation, cyanobacterial blooms, harmful algal blooms, that's the DNR, Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
Works very closely on projects with local health departments as well as federal agencies like the EPA, CDC, to conduct remediation / restoration projects for impaired water bodies, bodies that, you know, experience, just have this excess of nutrients in them and as a result are producing frequent annual harmful algal blooms.
What's the website? How do people contact you or get more information?
You can go to dhs.wi.gov and then in the search bar, search algae. Mm-hmm. And then the first page that pops up will be our harmful algal blooms page at the Department of Health Services.
Okay, terrific. dhs.wi.gov.
Yep, we have a significant under-reporting issue, under-reporting of illnesses.
Yeah, that makes
Wisconsin.
Sense.
Yeah. So we receive about 30, on average, about 30 health complaints each year.
Okay.
And again, as I mentioned, not all of these health complaints will be related to harmful algal blooms.
Mm-hmm.
But 30, if you think about it, it's not really a lot considering how many lakes,
there are.
Yeah. And so, you know, we kind of assume that due to this lack of general knowledge about harmful algal blooms across the state and lack of being able to, you know, diagnose this illness and lack of knowledge about it in general, due to this, there's an under-reporting issue. People don't know that their illness is related to a harmful algal bloom.
Right.
And then if they suspect that it is, a lot of times people don't know that they can report it. And so we really rely on people reporting these illnesses to us so we can learn more about them. But we can't learn more about them if people aren't reporting them to us. So I think I would just, my overall message to the people is please report. If you suspect your illness could be related to harmful algal blooms, to report this illness either to your local health department or to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Great. So. Thank you. And the last thing I want to ask you is, what do you do for fun? What is Jordan all about
than
algal blooms? Do you do you jog? Do you skydive? Do you do you swim around in algal blooms so you can learn more about
I do not do that.
Okay, good.
No, I am huge volleyball player.
Oh, nice.
I played volleyball through college, and now I play volleyball recreationally, but still competitively.
Mm-hmm.
And I like hanging out with my dog.
Oh,
my dog,
nice.
Stanley. Oh. He's I adopted him last August.
Tell me about Stanley.
He's about to be 13. He's turning 13 in 13 days. Yeah, his birthday's coming up.
Wow.
Adopted him from the Dane County Humane Society.
Oh, good for you.
And he's a Parson Russell Terrier. So he's a little 15-pound white little thing.
Okay.
Very high strung, very energetic for his age, very mobile, very agile.
That's cool.
he's the best. He loves to cuddle.
Yeah.
But he also loves his walks.
Yeah.
He is my best friend, very protective of me. So anyone who gets near me, he does not appreciate that. So my guard dog, my protector. So
nice.
We love Stanley. Yeah.
That's great to have. And I've always been a dog lover myself. And and so yeah, I totally get that. Stanley,
yep.
That is so great. I love it when people give their dogs human names.
Yeah,
I think that's,
me too.
You've been listening to the Badger Talks podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jordan Murray, harmful algal bloom epidemiologist with the University of Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Please browse our previous episodes for other topics that may be of interest to you. The Badger Talks podcast is a creation of UW Connects and produced at Audio for the Arts Recording Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our music is composed by Bill Purdy and performed by the UW Marching Band. I'm Buzz Kemper. Thank you for listening.